have been looking at the fact that Jesus is greater, the amazing truth about that, that he is greater than any other system, than anything else we could come up with. And so we follow him as our example in this motto that we have, and you can say it along with me, that we, the church, as followers of Jesus, will love as Jesus loved, teach what Jesus taught, and obey as Jesus obeyed. That's who we are, and that's who we want to be. We want to be like Jesus. That's what he's called us to. We've been looking through the book of Hebrews, the first week, Hebrews 1 and 2, then Hebrews 3 and 4. Last week, a bigger portion, Hebrews 5 through 10. And our memory verse, our power verse for this series is Hebrews 9:14, that looks over, this gives a very condensed form of what we wanted to see, where it says, how much more will the blood of Christ, what Jesus has done for us, who through the eternal Spirit offered himself unblemished to God, cleanse our consciences from dead works or from useless rituals, that we may serve the living God. How much more will what Jesus has done change us so that we can serve God? We, that word, we, is there so much. We, the church, it's not me, the pastor, or at least not just. One of the things that worries me the most about church that I see today and why I want us to look through Hebrews is so often we don't expect that we can really hear God speaking. We don't expect that we should be close to him. We don't expect that he wants to be a part of our daily lives. And I get stuck in that so often. I don't expect to interact with God every day. For some reason, I just think, oh, well, maybe once in a lifetime, God will say this amazing thing. Or maybe once in a year, God will do it. Or if I go to this conference, God will do it. Or for those that are nice and churchy, they'll believe that God will speak to them once a week on Sunday morning. But we don't always think we'll actually hear from God, that he wants to interact with us at all moments, all the time, every day. And today, what we'll look at, I hope will make that clear to you, that we can get close to God. Each person in this room, not just me. So the title of today, instead of being a Jesus is greater one, is what our response is. And our response is faith. And faith does. Faith is an action word. Faith moves. To start with, I said it last week, I've said it in the past, I'm not that special. It's not just about me and how I was some amazing person my whole life. And the first paragraph we're going to read today is one of my favorite verses in the Bible. I don't know what's my very favorite one, that'd be hard to say, but this one has meant so much to me for more than a decade. The time I remember studying this verse and making it a part of me was about 10 years ago. I was 21 years old. I was studying journalism. I wasn't studying theology or anything like that. I was going to college. I was working in a cafeteria, which meant I cleaned floors. I served people pizza or made people omelets in the morning. I made sure to change out the drinks. It was just a normal job. I biked to work. Not many of you actually believe that Americans can do that, but I did bike to work. Bike to and from. And I was a student. I was the kind of person that one time I was biking back from work and I saw on the side of the road there was pizza dough that someone must have bought at the store, put on top of their car, and driven off without remembering it, and the pizza dough flew off and landed on the side of the road. I was a student. It was real food. I took it home. I made a pizza out of it. I was just a normal person. At that time, there was a girl that I had liked. She had kind of liked me. We were never dating, but we liked each other. And then she stopped liking me. And then she started liking someone else. I was like, oh, do you... I mean, I don't want to say the guy was a loser, but comparatively, I was like, come on. I'm a better option. Why? Why would you do that? And I say all that just to say this. A normal guy with a job that wasn't special, studying something that wasn't specifically special, who lived through the same things that so many people live through, But I had a passion for the Word of God, and I wanted to learn it. And so reading this paragraph and studying it got so on fire in my heart, and I loved it, and I wanted to share it because it was something worthwhile. But I didn't have to be a pastor to do it. I was just a normal guy. And God wants to speak to us all, no matter how normal we feel. So Hebrews chapter 10, verses 19 to 25. One of my favorite paragraphs of the Bible says, "Therefore, brothers and sisters, since we have confidence to enter the most holy place by the blood of Jesus, by a new and living way opened for us through the curtain, that is his body, since we have a great priest over the house of God, let us draw near to God with a sincere heart and with a full assurance that faith brings, having our hearts sprinkled to cleanse us from a guilty conscience. Having our bodies washed with pure water, let us hold unswervingly to the hope we profess, for he who promised is faithful. And let us consider how we may spur one another on toward love and good deeds, not giving up meeting together as some are in the habit of doing, but encouraging one another, and all the more as we see the day approaching." In this, he kind of follows the logic where he says, since this, then let us do this, let us do this, and let us do this. There are three things he says, let us do this. And so, in your notes, you can see that I'm going to call this a mixed lettuce salad because there's several lettuces that he all puts together. First, the since parts. He says, okay, first, since we have a cleansing sacrifice. Last week we looked at that Jesus is our sacrifice, he is our priest. Since we have someone who paid a price for us, that cleans us. The really cool part about this, which is maybe me because I'm dorky, I'm not a Greek scholar, but I found a way online where you can see what some of the Greek is, and it mentions that Jesus did this by a new and living way. New living, this is great. But when I looked up what new meant, it surprised me, or it kind of shocked me. The word for new is also the same word that you would use for fresh. Such as, a man goes on a boat, he catches a fish, he brings it back and said, "I have fresh fish." You go to the store, you buy fresh meat. The idea of new is also that it's freshly slaughtered. And when I saw that, I went, this is really funny. This is really, really cool. He says it's through a freshly slaughtered yet living way. Dead yet living. And when we see Christ, that's the incredible thing, is that we have him who has his sacrifice is forever fresh to us. It is forever available, and it's forever just as good as it was the very first day. It doesn't get old. It doesn't get stale. It doesn't get moldy. It doesn't get bacteria growing on it. Jesus's offer, his sacrifice, is forever a fresh thing, and yet is forever a living thing. That's why he's the perfect one. It can never get better because his can always stay the best. And since we have a great priest, the other times that we saw in Hebrews, he talks about a high priest, but he uses a different word here. He says a great priest, and the word great isn't so much often used in the spiritual realm of priests. It's used for kings. Alexander the Great, how many of you know that one? Willem the Great, or any, we give the great on the end of king's names, that he is our great priest. Gives this picture that he's not just a priest, but he's a king. He's a priestly king, or a kingly priest. Since we have Jesus, who is both of these things perfectly for us, what should we do? It's not since we have it, great, let's go home. What should we do? And he gives three things. First, let us get close to God in faith. Us, not let the pastors do it. Not just let the super spiritual people do it. Not just let the people who grew up in a Christian home do it. He said, let us draw close to God. Do you realize what he's offering you? He's saying, come directly up to me. And then he says, being cleansed in our consciences, but also our bodies, inside, outside, every side, upside, downside. Jesus can clean every part of you. So don't let that keep you away. Don't let sin or shame keep you away. He is able, he is capable. So let us get close to God. Next, let us hold tightly to hope. Let us hold tightly to hope. The hope we profess, a hope that we speak. It's not something that we just sit at home and say, well, I have hope. But it's a hope that we're making clear. And the hope that we profess, let's hold on to it. Don't give up on it. I can't give up on it. And why? Because he's faithful. He who called is faithful. He does not lie. He does not lie. And in your life, there may be things where you go, well, Christianity is great, but I don't really expect it from me. He says, let us do it, and he does not lie. God has not lied to you. So hold tightly to that hope that we profess, because he is faithful. He will be faithful. And even in things in my life where I don't see the answer yet, he is faithful. I have to believe that. And the third one, yes, we hold tightly to God. We get close to him in faith. Yes, we hold on to the hope that's inside of us. We hold on to that hope. And the third isn't just about what's up and down and what's inside of me, but it reaches out to other people. And let us push each other to love. This one was also interesting when I looked at the Greek background of it, because it's not normally the word you would expect to see. It's not, let us encourage each other nicely to do it. The word that it uses is, in some versions, let us spur, let us provoke, let us pester or annoy people to love. Normally we think you provoke someone to anger, you provoke someone to hate. And he says, you know what we should do? We should provoke people to love. It's not walking up to your friends saying, maybe you should love people. But let us consider ways that we can give people a little push, because sometimes they need that. Love does things. Love moves, and love can push. Friends of mine, some of the people in this church who know me well enough, have told me that they get scared when I come up to them and say, I have a question for you. Oh, no, Matt. What is it you're going to ask me to do? The reason why I do that is because I'm considering, how can I spur people on to love and good deeds? If people are afraid of me going up and asking them to step forward in faith and step forward in love, well, you know what? I'm okay with that. I'll keep doing it anyway. But it's not, let the pastor consider how he can push people to do it. He says, let us consider how we may spur, may provoke, may push one another to love and good deeds. And so when people say, well, Christianity is something you should just keep to yourself, that's not what we're told. We're told that Christianity is something that should be getting involved in other people's lives towards love. Not to be pushy, not to be angry or mean, but to provoke people to love. We must do this. Not just me. Christianity is not a solitary thing. Because faith does something. Faith acts. At the end of Hebrews 10, he says, we are not those who shrink back and are destroyed. We are those who believe. So what does faith look like? Well, faith acts. Faith moves. The chapter of Hebrews 11 says all these things about faith and what people did by faith. So let's look at a few of them. By faith, Abel brought a sacrifice. By faith, Enoch was taken. By faith, Noah built. By faith, Abraham obeyed and went. By faith, even Sarah was enabled to bear children. By faith, Isaac blessed. By faith, Jacob, he worshipped and he leaned on his staff. By faith, Joseph spoke about his bones. By faith, Moses refused to be considered part of this elite class, and he chose to be part of God's people that were slaves at the time. By faith, the people passed through the Red Sea. By faith, the walls of Jericho fell down. By faith, the prostitute Rahab was not killed along with others that did not believe. Are you seeing that there's this category of what faith does? And faith doesn't always look exactly the same. This is true. But faith will move you to do something. It goes further. Other people, through faith, they conquered kingdoms. They administered justice. They gained what was promised. They shut the mouths of lions. They quenched the fury of the flames. They escaped the edge of the sword. They had weakness turned to strength. By faith, women received back their dead, raised to life. I will do that too. And by faith, some were tortured, and they chose not to turn back from Jesus, but they said, I will willingly be tortured for Christ to gain an even better resurrection. But their faith led them to do something. None of these say that their faith sat around in a church building. By faith, someone attended a congregation. Because by faith, they did something. It made a difference in their life. And if our response of faith to all these things of what Jesus has done, it started with Jesus. Jesus is our sacrifice. He is our priest. He has cleansed us. He has made it capable for us to go to God, to hold to hope, to push each other to love. So faith in response will act. Hebrews 11:6 says, without faith, it is impossible to please God, because anyone who comes to him must believe that he exists and that he rewards those who earnestly seek him. So many Christians I know stop with this. They believe that God exists. But so many people, by the way they live, does not tell me that they believe that he rewards those who seek him. Do you live that way? My question then is, if you believe he exists, and if you really believe he rewards those who earnestly seek him, then why aren't you doing it? Some people think it's just enough to believe he exists, but he expects us to seek after him. And there are people who seem to complain that God plays favorites and it seems like he's so available to somebody and not available to me. Well, my first question is this. Have you made God your favorite? Because here's the thing that works very well in human relationships. Christine is my favorite person. I am her favorite person. It works out really nice, so we get to spend a lot of time together. But if she was my favorite person and she was running around after 15 other guys, we're not going to get to spend the same kind of time together. So if you think that God isn't spending enough time with you, the honest question to first look at, has he chosen you, but you said, well, I like you, but I like 15 others as well, and I'm splitting my time up. That way I can be nice and balanced. He says, I want to be first. I will be the only one worshipped, the only God. I want to be first. I'm not splitting it. So to complain that God is playing favorites, have you made him your favorite and said, I will seek him and I will keep going after him and I will keep asking him and I will keep talking to him? God is pleased by our faith when we do that. It doesn't say that God is pleased by those who go to theological school. It's not pleased by having a good memory. It doesn't say he's pleased by you being a good person. It says he's pleased when you believe he exists and you believe that he rewards those who earnestly seek him. So let's look at the examples of other people who have done that, who have followed through, that even in their own weaknesses and even in their flaws, they received what God had promised. Don't become lazy. Hebrews 6:11-12 says this: "We want each of you to show this same diligence, the diligence we've seen of other people's faith, to show the same diligence to the very end so that what you hope for may be fully realized. We do not want you to become lazy, but to imitate those who through faith and patience inherit what has been promised." We don't want you to become lazy. The next mixed lettuce salad comes in Hebrews 12:1-3. This is another one of the great parts of the Bible. I really love this one too. It says, "Since we are surrounded by so many examples of faith," just like we saw in Hebrews 6, just like we saw in Hebrews 11, "since we're surrounded by so many examples of faith, let us rid ourselves of everything that gets in the way and of the sin which holds on to us so tightly, and let us run with determination the race that lies before us. Let's keep our eyes fixed on Jesus, on whom our faith depends from beginning to end. He did not give up because of the cross. On the contrary, because of the joy that was waiting for him, he thought nothing of the disgrace of dying on the cross, and he's now seated at the right side of God's throne. Think of what he went through and how he put up with so much hatred from sinners. So do not let yourselves become discouraged and give up." When he was writing Hebrews, he was writing to a bunch of people who were getting discouraged and were considering giving up. And they had said, "Oh, we thought Jesus was nice for a while, but maybe it's just easier to go back to the old way." And he says, "No, don't you get it? We can't look away from Jesus. We must continue to look at him. We have these examples of faith. Let's push on." So since we have examples of faith, you know what those examples of faith show me? That it can happen, that we can live that way, that it's not a false hope. It's not some kind of hoax where we're told, "Hey, live by faith," and then it's impossible for us to reach it. No, he says we have great examples. We have people who lived lives of faith despite all their faults. And you can read their faults in the Bible. You can see the stupid things people did. You can see the mistakes that they made time and again. And yet, you can see that they lived by faith. It's possible. It is attainable. So, since we have that example, what do? First, let us put aside hindrances. In that, he includes sin. He says, put aside hindrances and sin, but it's not always just sin. Sometimes good things keep us from really living by faith. Sometimes our comforts keep us from living by faith. It says, let us get rid of those hindrances. If you realize in your life that your thoughts are more focused on other things instead of Jesus, then find ways to move those other things out so that Jesus has the first place. He says, let us do it. Let us put aside those hindrances. Not let's find someone else to do it for us. Or not let's hope that it happens. Maybe we'll get lucky and we'll stop focusing on that. He says, put it aside. Look in your life, see what's a hindrance, and say, I'm getting rid of it. And if that's a sin, get rid of it. If it's not a sin, don't hold on to it and say, well, it's not sin, so it's okay for me to do it. Is it living by faith? Is it a faith that moves and acts? And if it's not, then say, maybe that shouldn't be in my life. After you've put aside those hindrances, let us run with determination. Let's persevere. Let's endure. Run. It's an action. Again, you're seeing that action is a part of what God calls us to. Not out of guilt, but out of what he's done. Since we have all these things he's given us, then let's do it. Then let's live that and run with determination. Let's keep our look faced ahead. Don't stop here and don't just watch others running the race. Run the race yourself. Be part of this race. It's not finished. Your life isn't done yet. If you're here, I can tell, I can see your face. You're breathing. Your life isn't finished. There's more left to do. So run with perseverance. Don't give up. Don't stop. When you have a hard week, when you have bad news, don't give up. Don't stop. When things don't look the way you wanted, when you feel like you've received a miracle and then you wonder what happened to it, don't give up. Don't stop. Let's run with perseverance. And then last, let us stay focused on Jesus. Because these other examples of people, he says, since we have these examples, let's focus on Jesus. They were never meant to steal our affection. It was not so that you could have your focus on your mom and your dad, who was a great example for you. They are, if they're examples, great. They're examples. Let them point you to Jesus. It's not so that you can rely upon a pastor or a preacher or somebody that you saw on a podcast. That's great, but let their example point you to Jesus. It's not so you can rely upon your Connect group leader. And my prayer for this church, my prayer for my life, is that people would look at me and it would point them to Jesus. Let us stay focused on Jesus. Those are 6 things of our lettuce salad. Let us get close to God in faith. Let us hold on tightly to hope. Let us spur each other to love. If you noticed, faith, hope, and love are all a part of that. That's another just cool part that I love in there. And let us put aside hindrances. Let us run with determination. Let us keep focused on Jesus, because our faith depends on Jesus from beginning to end. He's the author and perfecter, or completer, is the way another one says it. He's the one who started writing this story. You didn't. He did. He knew you before you were born, and he started writing your story. And if he started it, trust him to finish it. So we've seen what Jesus did by faith. And we've seen examples of what other people did by faith. Question now, what will you do by faith? The last line you have, by faith, then there's 2 blanks. The first blank is for your name. For me, it's by faith, Matthew. But then what do you fill in that next blank? What is what faith will lead you toward? What is the action that God has for you? A good friend of mine said that she wrote that in the back of her Bible, and she looks at it often because it says, by faith, Elizabeth, and it's a blank that she's filling in by her life. Faith does.